Hello, Cindy.
Hey, how are you, Ken?
Good. Great to hear your voice.
Great to hear yours.
I'm very much looking forward to this. We are going to discuss spiritual intelligence.
Yes.
Yes, which is something that you have put an awful lot of work into and are certainly one of the world's leading experts on. And I thought what we would do is to go through several important points that you raised in a paper you wrote called Spiritual Intelligence and the SQI Assessment and its relationship to Ken Wilber's Integral Theory, and then go through several of the points on the Spiritual Intelligence Assessment itself, particularly from the sample report showing exactly how each of the 21 qualities of spiritual intelligence that you've identified, how they come to the fore and have an important part to play in this rather extraordinary thing that we call spiritual intelligence.
That would be fantastic.
Awesome. Let me just start by reading a few things from the first essay. Why do we need to understand spiritual intelligence? I define spiritual intelligence as, quote, the ability to behave with wisdom and compassion while maintaining inner and outer peace, equanimity, regardless of the circumstances. Wisdom and compassion compose the two pieces of loving behavior. And I think there's a particular felicitous choice, particularly given the definitions of wisdom and compassion that you find in many of the contemplative traditions. In Buddhism, for example, wisdom refers to awareness of the absolute, and compassion refers to activity in the realm of the relative. So wisdom is awareness of emptiness, and compassion is giving good behavior in the relative realm. And these are definitely the two major legs of the Buddhist tradition. So I think it's really good to see them as part of your definition.
Wonderful. That's beautiful.
Yeah. They turn out to be really extraordinary topics, extraordinary terms, extraordinary ideas. And both of them clearly have a role to play in spiritual intelligence. You continue by saying, the world's religions generally advocate loving behaviors. Yet religious beliefs have often divided our planet and caused war. We have been trapped in a world that tends to confuse the doctrine with the destination. What we need is a way to talk about the skills that religions are trying to help us attain. And, of course, as you point out, we have to be careful here because the simplest developmental model, for example, is pre-rational to rational to transrational. And unfortunately, many religions still promulgate pre-rational magic and mythic. Now, I don't see you doing this, but that's because you have made a spiritual, intellectual judgment on which religious traits to include. And those good traits are what are measured in the spiritual intelligence inventory.
Wonderful. I'm glad you don't think I'm pre-rational. at least not every day.
You continue by saying, I have three goals in trying to more clearly define spiritual intelligence, or SQ, by creating and testing a competency-based assessment, the SQI, the spiritual intelligence inventory.
Mm-hmm.
One, to create a language that enables us to discuss these concepts without being limited to the language of any one faith tradition. SQI, Spiritual Intelligence Inventory, language with clear definitions showing synonyms from many belief systems, including atheism and secular humanism. Two, to create a competency-based language and a novice-to-expert scaffolding that helps people access where they are and where they want to go in their own spiritual development. And three, to create a faith-neutral and faith-friendly language of competencies that make spiritual intelligence acceptable for discussion in many settings, including in the workplace, the place where most of us spend most of our time. Those are all really important goals, and particularly important is the workplace, isn't it? I mean, there's just an increasing demand for making room for spirit in the workplace.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Of course, the one of the main problems is that, you know, there's at least these, you know, two major different meanings to spirituality or religion. And one, of course, is the pre-rational, magic and mythic and ethnocentric and fundamentalist, which mostly has a bad reputation. You know, and then there's the transrational, emancipatory, liberating, compassionate, wisdom branches of religion, and they have a very positive reputation. But people are never sure which one they're going to get.
Right, and then so people avoid religion altogether.
Exactly.
And the topic of spirituality, which they confuse with religion.
Exactly. And what ends up is that political parties that themselves have certain of their tenets rooted in pre-rational ideas, you might as well just say it, it's, you know, Republicans, end up cornering all the God talk.
Right.
Because they attach themselves to those pre-rational, fundamentalist, ethnocentric religious terms from the biblical tradition, and sort of corner the market on that. And so that's where all the God talk goes to the Republicans, and Democrats, liberals, are historically extremely shy to discuss anything spiritual at all.
Right. And I was raised a Republican in the orange flavor of that, the highly rational, logical, scientific approach. And the regressive branch of the Republican Party has sort of hijacked what it means to be a Republican, along with hijacking what it means to be a believer of any kind.
Yeah, bad news on both counts.
Yes.
And that's why, you know, it's so important to, you know, redo both of those and allow, you know, much more freedom and authenticity back into both of those wings.
Right.
It's so disastrous the way it's set up now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think working on something like this, on spiritual intelligence, is so important, because it clearly makes a judgment about what good spirituality is. And it doesn't just automatically include everything that all the world's religions want. Because many of them want, you know, jihad. And, you know, very, very poorly developed, regressive notions, and yet, you know, many religions cater to those. And so that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about spiritual intelligence. Or if it is, it's a very early level. It's a very, frankly, low level of spiritual intelligence.
Developmentally, and of course you know there's a strong developmental bias in this assessment, I would say the novice level of these skills would generally be occurring at about amber on the developmental altitude scale.
Right. Right. And
so
that,
if you're in that red purple zone, you wouldn't even get there.
And that's what's so sad about a lot of where the world's religions are, which is that amber or mythic, literal, or traditional values, that scores zero on your inventory. And yet that is the default location of many of the world's religions. I mean, it really starts to look like that. When we hear the phrase spiritual but not religious, you know, often now. But there's a lot to it. I mean, it almost starts to look like spirituality begins where religion ends.
It certainly can feel like that. And I was raised Christian and have taken back that label. For a long time, I refused to use the label.
Right.
But I'm very involved with the Unity Church, as you know, which is a progressive Christian group, and was a wonderful home for me to find where I could use my orange logic document analysis and totally embrace the work of Bishop Spong and the Jesus Seminar and the green pluralistic sensibilities of you know, honoring all faith traditions and bringing in speakers from other traditions. So there are many people out there hungering for a way to talk about this and potentially outside of a church and potentially inside of a workplace.
Well, exactly. And that the mention of the workplace, which I started off the conversation with, is incredibly important, because what we really have to be able to do is find a version of religion / spirituality that really is beyond the merely novice level of your spiritual intelligence assessment, because that's just really not something that's going to help somebody at work or at play, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what it says, novice. I mean, the score is zero, meaning this is, you're still at the baseline. Unfortunately, because that's still a very common stance for so many people embracing a religious / spiritual orientation, that it just continues to keep spirituality of a higher variety, of a deeper variety, of a more authentic variety, out of public spheres in general.
Mm-hmm.
We're afraid of having spirituality in our educational systems. We're afraid of having it in our politics. And we're afraid of having it in our workplace.
And yet people are starving.
Well, that's the horrifying thing about it. You know, people are, if we look at spiritual intelligence as the stages of spiritual intelligence, and just use Gene Gebser's terms for the moment, moving from archaic to magic to mythic to rational to pluralistic to integral, there are people that want a way to carry their spirituality beyond the mythic, novice level of involvement. And that means that it can embrace and feel very comfortable with a rational point of view, with a pluralistic point of view, with an integral point of view. And that's what people are starving for, one of those three. And they're sick of the mythic, literal, ethnocentric, Bible is the literal truth of God orientation, that they're just starved to death in the middle of that. So incredibly important that we find ways to introduce some of these higher levels of spiritual intelligence, these higher levels of development in general, that can freely adopt spiritual attitudes.
And making the world a better place is kind of the largest umbrella under which I think you and I both work, and helping human beings grow up is a critical part of that.
Right, exactly. And when you think about it, if you look at all the multiple intelligences, and essentially you make the strong argument that spiritual intelligence, you know, it could be defined and measured in many different ways, but one of the legitimate ways, and certainly the way that you've taken, is that it is a legitimate multiple intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at that and use a complementary definition of the spiritual, which both Paul Tillich to James Fowler have used, which is that which relates to ultimate concern.
Mm-hmm.
What it really means is that the spiritual intelligence line of all of the multiple intelligences, it's the only judgment, the only intelligence, the only line that actually interacts with the absolute,
mm-hmm.
actually interacts with the infinite. It's actually us attempting to relate to and engage with ultimate truth.
Mm-hmm.
When all of the other multiple intelligences, cognitive, intrapersonal, emotional, physical, those are all how we relate to the finite realm, to the relative realm. And so this one intelligence, which ought to be, because of its relationship with ultimate reality, ought to be leading the pack, is, in fact, usually at the end. It's at the lowest levels of development. Most other human disciplines are into at least rational and pluralistic levels of development, everything except human religion. And that's dragging its ass at the, at the mythic, traditional, novice level of development. I mean, of course the new atheists make fun of this. I mean, if all this means is Moses really did part the Red Sea and God really did rain down frogs on the Egyptians, and I mean, you know, if that's the word of ultimate truth, it's hard not to ridicule and make fun of something like that.
Of course, of course. And, you know, Spong makes the point, Bishop Spong, that the Jews who wrote those stories did not take them literally,
yeah.
but the Christians who followed them tended to. The Jewish storytelling tradition tends to emphasize, at least according to him, the emotional impact of the event. That's what they're trying to convey.
Right.
And they weren't trying to document history like we think of it. You
know? Right. I think that's a fine point, and we can supplement that by looking at the Bible as kind of literally, to some degree, a history of development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, moving from tribal magenta levels to warrior red levels to traditional amber levels, and in some cases then with Christ even higher. And then that,
thank God for that journey. You know?
Thank God for that journey. But then it starts to make sense because, the God of the Old Testament, particularly the early Old Testament, is a vengeful, violent, mean son of a bitch.
Right. I remember hearing a kid say, God gets nicer as the story goes along.
Yeah, and thank God for that. And,
yes.
You know. Human beings, you know, continue to grow up, and so their interaction with and their account of and their interpretation of ultimate concern and ultimate reality gets higher and higher and better and nicer,
mm-hmm.
And manages to, you know, struggle on up to the novice level of spiritual intelligence. But boy, what a nasty story it is at the beginning.
Yes. Looking backwards, you know, we can just cringe and say, oh, you know, it's like I look at my own adolescence and I cringe, you know.
Yeah.
You look at human adolescence and you cringe.
Exactly. But at the same time, you know, taking that developmental or evolutionary point of view, I think in many ways allows us to sort of appreciate, you know, the early story and say, okay, look, this is, you know, this is where I was as a child. This is where humanity was as a child. And here's what we were trying to do. And so you can kind of appreciate it from that point of view. And it sort of liberates it by, you know, plugging it in to a developmental or an evolutionary framework. And then God doesn't have such a nasty look to him or her, but just looks like a, you know, a childish view.
Right. The child's perspective on ultimate reality.
Right. Right. You know, and cranky. There is, somebody counted, there's something like 400 instances of God telling his own people to commit violence against others.
Mm-hmm.
This is truly a vengeful God. This is truly a wrathful God. It's sort of like, you know, a drunken Zeus kind of stumbling his way through history and his chosen people, kind of cranky. You continue with defining intelligence, and you say Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary defines intelligence as the ability to learn or understand or to deal with new or trying situations. Our intelligence quotient, or IQ, is generally thought of as our analytical or mathematical intelligence and our linguistic intelligence. Think of college entrance exams, verbal and math components. Initially, it was expected that IQ would be a strong predictor of success in careers. In fact, it has turned out to be a weak predictor of success. IQ appears to be related to minimum standards to enter a given profession. Once you have chosen your career, what actually leads to success is far more complicated. Howard Gardner opened the door to discussion of multiple intelligences with his book, Frames of Mind, in 1983. He listed seven different types of intelligences in that book. One, linguistic. Two, logical, mathematical. Three, musical. Four, bodily, kinesthetic. Five, spatial. Six, interpersonal. And seven, intrapersonal. You say Gardner's sixth and seventh intelligences are combined into the study of emotional intelligence by Daniel Goleman and others. So emotional intelligence is actually a very sophisticated intelligence.
And one in which is desperately missing in most workplaces, which keeps me employed.
Yes, and as you point out later, And this essay is one that often doesn't develop until significantly later, certainly post-adolescence, because it is so sophisticated. And you have drawn, as you point out, you have drawn heavily on Goleman and Boyatzit's presentation of emotional intelligence to create your particular version of spiritual intelligence.
Yes, I have. I got certified in Daniel Goleman and Richard Boyatzis' methodology and their four quadrants, which unfortunately are not exactly the same as yours, were a useful way for me in my first exposure to this field to think about this is a really great way to express something touchy-feely to
right.
a group of engineers. So
right.
if I can use this in an
right.
oil company, then maybe there's a way I could do something similar with
right.
spiritual competencies.
And, of course, their four quadrants translate into my four quadrants. I, of course, think there's an advantage to mine because there's an actual rationale on how my quadrants fit together. But the point is they spotted, you know, these essential components. The four quadrants are truly fundamental dimensions, and it is a, you know, it's a terrific way to look at anything, including emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any trouble with that at all. You continue in Intelligence Reframed, 1999, Gardner offers that one might add a philosophical intelligence, which would combine spiritual, moral, emotional, transcendental, cosmic, and religious intelligences. Gardner lists eight criteria for intelligence. One criteria is particularly relevant for this discussion is that, quote, an intelligence should show a developmental history with a definable set of expert end state performances. Now, that, of course, is very important. The fact that it show a developmental history is crucial, and it also reminds me just how poorly understood and how little discussed development itself is in the common culture or in the media or in any of our sort of more common worldviews. The notion of development is just left out of the scene almost entirely.
It is, and it's really unfortunate. It affects so many things. Everyday training in coaching, for example, tends to take that flatland perspective where it's all skills and it's all the same, and there's no larger container of which skills are appropriate for each developmental stage. And you can't teach calculus before you teach arithmetic. It's kind of the metaphor I use. You need to build
exactly.
from where someone is to get them there.
Exactly. And it's so lacking, and it explains so much. I mean, you look at the culture wars themselves, which are basically between traditional values, modern values, and postmodern values. And those are more or less exactly three basic stages of development: the traditional mythic stage, the rational formal operational stage, and the pluralistic postmodern stage.
Mm-hmm.
It just almost perfectly explains the culture wars, and yet absolutely nobody seems to point this out or to use this as an explanatory concept. And so we just sit there and watch the three of them basically yelling at each other, with, you know, and accomplishing nothing.
And the media is often being hijacked by pre-traditional, pre-rational branches of the world religions that do not represent their majority of
right.
the people, but seem to get the most attention.
Well, exactly. And that's just all the sadder, particularly for spirituality. And there goes our one intelligence that actually interacts with the ultimate. In certain ways, it's just catastrophic. I throw my hands up when I think about this, because, I mean, if you look at it, the lack of developmental understanding, particularly when it comes to religion or spirituality, is just devastating in terms of actually getting spiritual intelligence into a culture. Because the media, for example, only understands one version of spirituality, and that's novice level score zero on the spiritual intelligence inventory. And in other words, it's just the traditional fundamentalist ethnocentric standard version of religion, and it doesn't even understand the difference between, let's say, pre-rational religion and trans-rational religion. So it thinks that what Pat Robertson is doing and what, let's say, Father Thomas Keating is doing are the same thing. Whereas they are the opposite ends of the developmental spectrum. And this is completely over the head of the media, because it's pretty much completely over the head of our culture. Devastating.
Well, the center of gravity of our culture, as you well know, is sort of somewhere in that orange territory, with regressive tendencies lately down into amber.
Right.
So, and if you get to green, you find the pluralistic perspective resistant to hierarchy. So we obviously need enough people at Teal to find the skillful means to talk about this in ways that will allow amber, orange, and green to embrace this without having their normal allergic responses.
Well, that's really well put, and it's an extremely important point. I think that is the case, that we're really not going to find a way out of this whole culture war situation until we get a fair amount of development into second tier or Teal or yellow beam or vision logic or being needs, whatever term one wants. But it's only going to be from those levels that there's some sort of breakthrough is going to occur, because it's pretty clear that traditional modern and postmodern are locked into their own levels of development and show no signs of wishing to embrace any others.
And my hope is that by creating this language, which I've been testing now with, you know, quite a few people over the years, I have found it generally to be well received at Amber and above. It obviously takes some skillful effort, you know, to communicate
right.
in each person's faith language when
right.
necessary, in the language of science when necessary,
right.
and in the language of the spiritual but not religious when appropriate.
Right.
But this work seems to be able to play well in those three groups. And my hope and belief is that if we train in EQ and SQ, that we are assisting the developmental conveyor belt.
And that's, I think, one of the really important contributions that your work can make, which is doing that, which is flying under the radar of these value organizations and needs organizations that otherwise won't have this kind of discussion, but when put in these kinds of terms, are much more open to discussing it and then therefore to finding an appropriate spiritual response that resonates with whatever their level of development is.
And it becomes rapidly self-reinforcing in my coaching experience, because it works. This stuff works. And they start finding, gee, my life is working better.
Right.
What else you got?
Yeah. So in reference to Gardner's criteria that an intelligence should show a developmental history with a definable set of expert end state performances, you comment, our research with the SQI, Spiritual Intelligence Inventory, shows that our definition of SQ, Spiritual Intelligence, meets these criteria. Our research shows that skill development is strongly related to age, as true skills are, they are learned over time, although age is no guarantee of skills. And we have defined expert levels of performance. And so one version of spiritual intelligence quite apparently works, and you see it as basically one of several demonstrable multiple intelligences.
Yes, I do. And the age correlation was really crucial. It was one of the first things we tested for, because, you know, you have to treat all of these things as a hypothesis. It's just a working theory. And
right.
So approaching it as a working theory, if I have come anywhere close to describing true skills, we should see a correlation with age. If there was no correlation with age, or, you know, even worse, a reverse correlation with
yeah.
age, we'd be in deep trouble.
Right.
And so our first research, our beta pilot, was like over 500 data points and had a very strong correlation with age. So we
right.
were quite reassured.
Yeah, excellent. You know, it's so important that you get those kinds of correlations, because otherwise there's really nothing to stop you from, you know, making this stuff up.
Right, being pre-rational.
Yeah. Yes, basically. Under a simplified view of multiple intelligences, you say the following. While this model, the following model, is oversimplified from a scientific standpoint, I find it very useful when introducing multiple intelligences in a short time. This model describes only four intelligences, and these are described in a pyramid, with the base being physical intelligence, and then above that, typical IQ, and then above that, emotional intelligence, and then above that, spiritual intelligence, with an arrow going from EQ, emotional intelligence, to SQ, and from SQ to EQ, to show their tight interrelationship. You say, I show them as a pyramid to demonstrate the simplest sequence of development by line of intelligence. I always acknowledge that this is a too simple model, yet it is a helpful visual aid. The idea of this model is that as babies, we first focus on controlling our bodies, physical intelligence, or PQ, then our linguistic and conceptual skills develop, IQ, and are a key focus of our schoolwork. We do some early development of relationship skills, but for many of us, EQ, or emotional intelligence, becomes a focus area only later when we realize we need to improve, usually based on feedback in romantic and work relationships.
Which can be very painful.
Yes, it's usually, what kind of an idiot are you anyway that can't
right.
tell this? And men, particularly lagging in the area, I sometimes joke that women can discriminate something like 22 different varieties of emotions, and men have two, forward and reverse.
Oh, that's great.
You go on to state, brain studies also show that we are not fully wired to do more complex EQ work until we are approximately 22 years of age. SQ, or spiritual intelligence, typically becomes a significant focus of energy and effort even later, as we begin to search for meaning, deal with the complexity of our world, and ask, is this all there is? And I wanted to just point out one cautionary area, and that's that EQ, in a certain sense, its relationship to just fundamental emotions is actually much more sophisticated than that. It actually includes, as we pointed out earlier, a capacity for not just introspection, but interspection, interpersonal. It's a kind of social intelligence. Emotional intelligence, in a certain sense, is a little bit of a misnomer, because the word emotional, for example, the emotions are developing much earlier than emotional intelligence does. So all the traditional maps of consciousness, for example, stack these traits, for example, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, in just that way, so that actually it's really physical intelligence, then emotional intelligence, then IQ, then SQ, if we were just talking about just blunt, primitive emotions. So Houston Smith, for example, points out in the perennial philosophy that the layers of reality are given as matter, physical, body, emotional, and mind, mental, and then soul, divine, and spiritual. So matter, body, mind, soul, and spirit, or physical, emotional, mental, divine, and spiritual. So emotions per se, as prana or bioenergy, come before mind or intellect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you have is fine, you know, especially given the way Goleman defines emotional intelligence. It's a very sophisticated skill. But I just wanted to point it out, just to be a little bit careful.
It's very important, because emotions are occurring and sourcing primarily out of our limbic system.
Right.
And emotional intelligence is heavily dependent on the frontal lobes of the neocortex.
Right on the money. Like I say, it really is a sophisticated intelligence, quite developed, quite evolved. And also one of the things that, of course, you're perfectly aware of, is that in your pyramid, as you have each of these listed, each of those in itself is a developmental line, or a multiple intelligence, actually. And so you could show the development of each one of these as, lines starting in the center of the pyramid and extending to the right.
Yes, absolutely. That would be a fun illustration. Thank you for that idea.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. I mean, 'cause that's what happens. Those things continue to develop.
Right.
But then otherwise, I think that this is very cool, And it really hits on four of just absolutely the most fundamental developmental lines that we have, or multiple intelligences that we have. And I think it would be particularly good for, you know, getting this into some place like the workplace. Mm-hmm. Because fortunately, the notion of emotional intelligence has had a pretty big impact on the workplace, just because of all, you know, the data showing that one's emotional intelligence turns out to be just a major predictor of success in the business world. And so, of course, all those, you know, little yummy orange, you know.
God bless orange.
God bless them. All their love of achievement and accomplishment and excellence and all that drives them to embrace it. And the very title itself is attractive to green. So emotional intelligence has made it into the workplace, and everybody knows what IQ is. Physical intelligence, no antibodies there, no allergies there. And so plunking spiritual intelligence on top of all of that is a very cool idea, because then it by association, guilt by association, appears as real mm-hmm. as these others.
And being at the top of the pyramid will activate orange Strive Drive.
Absolutely. So that's, you know, that's a very cool way to do it. And also, it's harder to think of four more fundamental intelligences, you know, than those. You say the pyramid is also useful in that PQ, physical intelligence, underlies our ability to function at all. People who do not manage their blood sugar, for example, may experience loss of cognitive function when blood sugar is low, as well as low demonstrations of EQ and SQ. The same is true for lack of sleep, poor hormone balance, low oxygen levels, and failure to properly maintain the body through exercise. So the intelligences are somewhat dependent upon each other, with PQ as foundation, yet SQ can also support and amplify all of them. High SQ makes us better able to sense our bodily state and use intuition as needed to supplement traditional diagnostic care. SQ supports our ability to show EQ, and SQ amplifies IQ by adding humility and openness to our mindset. So I think that is a pretty clear demonstration of the multiple interactions of these intelligences.
Multiple intelligence is a very complex thing, and no one picture can begin to explain it.
Right, exactly. And I think that's why people so quickly appreciated Gardner's work on it, and it just really opened doors and got us out of the exclusive cognitive line and into all of these other multiple lines of development. Of course, integral theory maintains that all of the multiple intelligences, no matter how different they are, all still proceed to the same essential levels of consciousness or levels of complexity. And we can see this in a so-called cycle graph, mm-hmm. where you take all the multiple intelligences or all the various developmental lines, there might be really upwards of a dozen of them, put them next to each other, and you can see, even though it's unnamed, they're essentially heading in the same direction. There's some sort of similarity between them, between the direction they're going. And it can, various sort of names can be used. They all move from egocentric to ethnocentric to worldcentric to cosmocentric, or they tend to go from pre-conventional to conventional to post-conventional to integrated and so on. But there's some sort of common field or matrix or dimensionality that they're all moving through. Of course, in integral theory, we just call this altitude, and like the traditions, just use a color from the rainbow. And in the traditions, unlike, let's say, with spiral dynamics, the colors are all arranged in the natural order that you find them in the real world. So in other words, they're arranged in the order you'd find them in a rainbow. So they move from red into greens, yellow, orange, into blue and indigo, and so on. But it's very, very obvious when you look at all of these multiple intelligences stacked up next to each other that they're really going into greater and greater levels of complexity and greater levels of consciousness.
Absolutely. And what's been fun for me to think about is, like, what's the necessary ingredients, like, as a minimum to break a threshold?
Right.
And there's really clearly some IQ capacity that has to be built to break the threshold into the rational.
Yeah, there's a kind of a common saying among developmentalists, which is that the cognitive stream is necessary but not sufficient for the others.
Right, because it breaks us into orange, but then it can't get us up into higher altitudes on its own.
Right. There are a lot of then other, you know, interesting interactions and necessities dealing with these multiple intelligences, and that's certainly one of them. But one of the reasons that cognitive is necessary but not sufficient for so much other development is you have to be aware of something before you're going to act on it or make a judgment about it. You have to have a cognitive capacity to see whatever it is that the multiple intelligence is going to make a judgment about. So if it's moral development or ethical development, you have to be aware of the ethical dilemma before you can actually engage ethical intelligence. So there has to be a cognitive capacity there to start with, or you're just not aware of whatever the heck it is the intelligence is dealing with.
And the beauty of the interactivity of it all is you develop a little EQ, you develop the ability to see other people's perspectives you couldn't see before, which amplifies your cognitive capacity.
Right.
And then you start thinking about things you hadn't thought about before, which can push EQ to the next level. And
right.
So these things interact in beautiful ways.
Definitely. Very, very multiply interactive. And then I've tended to divide them into just three rough categories. One is the sort of the cognitive and the cognitively related, whether that's Piaget or Keegan or Fisher, and then the so-called self-related lines. And these include things like moral development and Jane Levinger's ego development and Maslow's needs development and spiral dynamics values development. And I personally would put spiritual intelligence in that generalized category. And then there's a third category that it's called gifts or talents. And the point about gifts or talents is that in many cases, they just remain in some people at sort of level zero, more or less indefinitely. So everybody has some cognitive development and everybody has some self-development and the self-related lines that are closely related to the development of the self, including morals and needs and values. But some people just never develop musical capacities at all. They just stay stuck in the basement, and some people, even mathematical ability remains, you know, quite modestly developed. But those three types interact in very complex ways, and it's clear that all of them are, you know, important, and all of them are involved in consciousness and development and what it means to be a human being. And it's just fascinating. And clearly spiritual intelligence is one of those multiple intelligences.
And nobody's really known what to do with it.
You know, I think in large part that is because, you know, people don't know how to define religion. They have no sense of what religion and or spirituality can be. And even when we go through in a minute the five common ways that spirituality is used in a positive sense,
mm-hmm.
not in a negative sense, but in a positive sense, people are still unaware pretty much of all of those, even though all of them are active and are present, and tests can be developed for all of them. And you point out the relationship of your spiritual intelligence to these.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask, you know, just the average editor of any section in the New York Times, you know, tell us the difference between, you know, a pre-rational religion and a trans-rational spirituality, they're just going to look at you with a blank stare. It's going to be, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right.
And that is still probably the single most irritating factor about our cultural wisdom, our cultural knowledge, our background information, is that we only have one general definition of religion, spirituality. And it's essentially just fundamentally mythic literal.
And we look at people that we admire, like the Dalai Lama or Gandhi, but we have no concept of how to be like them. In fact, we see them as the exception, not an example.
Exactly. They're no different than Pat Robertson, except Pat Robertson, for other reasons, is a dangerous lunatic. And the Dalai Lama smiles a lot and is non-threatening. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're doing the same thing. They're both in the religion game. And that is as irritating as you can possibly find anything.
That flatland perspective, yes.
It's that flatland perspective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it really just overlooks the fact, using Gene Getzer's terms, that these multiple intelligences all move from archaic into magic, into mythic, into rational, into pluralistic, into integral forms. And there's a half dozen or more levels of reality, levels of consciousness, levels of complexity, levels of values, levels of needs, give us different worlds, just completely different worlds that people can live in. And it is just absolutely, you know, crazy not to recognize this developmental spectrum.
Yeah.
And particularly crazy when it comes to religion and spirituality, because that's probably one of the intelligences that shows the most striking difference between its lower levels and its higher levels, you know, with its lower levels being truly unlikable.
And dangerous for our long-term survival.
And dangerous, even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, devoted largely to egocentric or ethnocentric perspectives. And when you have that, then the person who's not part of your religion, who doesn't accept your savior, is truly an infidel, has no soul, mm-hmm. and you're allowed to kill those people. Not only is it not bad, it's sort of looked at as a career promotion
right. For
your soul. It's like a good thing you did. And so, it's understandable why the whole topic of spirituality remains so touchy mm-hmm. in politics, education, and business.
Right. So there's got to be a lot of us that find a way to include the rational and speak in a way that includes the rational so that we can get people unstuck from this prejudice against the spiritual conveyor belt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then when individuals actually get that religion, like all these other multiple intelligences, moves from a, you know, a magical version into a mythical version, into a rational version, into a pluralistic version, into an integral version, then it's not this automatic ridicule of religion per se. It's much more, well, what level are you talking about? And what degree of development are you talking about here when you mention God or mention the ultimate or mention higher self? So I can orient towards, you know, where you're actually coming from and whether, in fact, you're dangerous or a truly, you know, beneficial force
mm-hmm.
in the world. And it's just crazy, you know, when we don't get some of those fundamental differences. You say in the section under emotional intelligence that this SQI, Spiritual Intelligence Inventory, model was heavily influenced by the work of Daniel Goleman and Richard Boyatzis. Daniel Goleman popularized the phrase emotional intelligence with the publication of his book by the same title in 1995. EQ is actually a large collection of skills. Goleman and Boyatzis have grouped these skills into four quadrants, as shown below. And again, these can fairly easily be translated into my own quadrants. Self-awareness is the upper left. Self-management is the upper right. Other awareness is the lower left. And relationship skills is the lower right. But as you said, you hit upon this version, which is very useful and a terrific way to organize skills. Your spiritual intelligence, as you point out, has four quadrants basically related to the emotional intelligence quadrants, and you can think of those as just sitting on top of the EQ quadrants and all multiply interacting. And then you get to that tricky area of defining spirituality. Generally, the use of the word spirituality is poorly defined. In integral psychology, Ken Wilber outlines five definitions people frequently use for the word spirituality. They are, one, spirituality involves the highest levels of any of the developmental lines. Two, spirituality is the sum total of the highest levels of the developmental lines. Three, spirituality is itself a separate developmental line. Four, spirituality is an attitude, such as openness or love, that you can have at whatever stage you're at. And five, spirituality basically involves peak experiences. Now, there could be separate tests for all five of those,
of course,
any combination of them. And the first three, related to levels and lines, are more sort of structures of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And the last two, experiences, are more states of consciousness. And multiple intelligences are generally dealing with structures of consciousness. And these are things that are, in a sense, third-person constructs that are not immediately available to awareness unless they're pointed out, or you look at a map of them, or they're somehow defined. You can be sitting on a meditation mat, for example, and if you are untutored in any of this, you're never going to see something go, oh, that's a moral stage two thought.
Right.
Or, oh, that's an orange thought. These just aren't apparent to you. But states of consciousness are apparent. They're actual experiences like of overwhelming illumination or love or deep experience of compassion or care or something like that. And the world's contemplative traditions largely work with those states of consciousness. And there are maps like St. Teresa's seven mansions or seven stages, or St. John of the Cross's stages, are actually maps of first person direct state of consciousness experiences, things that you can just directly see and know and be aware of and aren't based on any construct or anything like that. Whereas multiple intelligences are generally something that are developed by looking at the person's interior in an objective fashion and attempting to define the stages that it goes through or its degree of competency or something like that, and in a way that the person then is not going to be directly aware of.
Unless it should show up in their behaviors.
Exactly, but it's not in a way that they can explain. And so your spiritual intelligence here is essentially working more with these multiple intelligences or structures of consciousness or developmental lines and less with states of consciousness or meditative states. Like Evelyn Underhill maintained that all mystics go through four stages, purgation, illumination, dark night, and unity consciousness. Now you ask about those, but spiritual intelligence competence isn't framed in that particular order.
No, it's compatible with it, and we talk about experience of transcendent oneness as one of the skills.
Right.
And as you so wonderfully point out, these experiences can leave stretch marks on our self-sense.
Exactly.
But how well we fill out that stretched sense of self and whether we really can embody it is based on these skills, these, you know, applications. It's not just pop a mushroom, have a state experience, and all of a sudden you've developed spiritual intelligence.
Well, exactly. But I'm just pointing out that the spiritual intelligence inventory itself is not based on stages of meditative state experience, which is fine. The five definitions of spirituality, you yourself point out that, quote, I see elements of all five definitions of spirituality in the SQI, but mostly my understanding of the 21 skills and SQ as a line focuses on the first three. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true. I'm essentially just agreeing with that, which means that it's less devoted to the other two, again, which is fine. It's just something to notice. And I think this is really incredibly important because there's a deep compliment hidden in here someplace, if you just bear with me.
Okay.
It's because the state of consciousness experiences are first-person experiences and therefore are directly available to the awareness of a person who is, for example, meditating. And because the structures of consciousness are more third-person constructs, that really don't show up until the Enlightenment in the West. And that's why you have these different developmental maps in the East and in the West, although you find some of them in the West as well. And that is the developmental maps of Western psychologists, and meaning most multiple intelligences, are in the form of these third-person objective structures of consciousness. So whether that's cognitive development or moral development, Lawrence Kohlberg, or ego development, Jane Levinger, or action logics, Kurt Fischer, these are all things that are values, Clara Graves and spiral dynamics. These are all things that, again, you are not obvious when you introspect. You can't really see them. It's not clear what they are until they're pointed out, or you see a map, or somebody walks you through them. And then you can say, oh, I see that. Okay, I'm experiencing that. And yes, it will show up in your behavior. But what we haven't had in the West is any fairly decent understanding of spirituality as it reflects in those structures of consciousness or in multiple intelligences. Whereas we have an enormous amount of understanding of spirituality as state of consciousness. Every contemplative tradition in the world has some map of states of meditative development. And they all show a general similarity, essentially, to the natural states of consciousness of waking, dreaming, deep sleep, witnessing, and non-dual. And so we have an enormous number of maps on that. And again, they all show essential similarity. And that's what allowed Evelyn Underhill to make that statement about Western mystics. But we find the same in the East, and people are actually looking at that, like Daniel P. Brown, find essential similarities in all of the meditative traditions. So what we're looking for is a map and a measurement of structures of consciousness, mm-hmm. or a multiple intelligence. And that's what the spiritual intelligence inventory does.
Well,
so
thank you. That's the compliment.
That's the compliment.
Thank you.
Finally got that out. So that's really important. And also, one of the reasons it's important is it also gives clues and, in some cases, direct practices for developing these structures of consciousness that relate to spirituality. And that's really important because the structures are essentially the way that we grow up, whereas states are the way that we wake up. And so what we're looking at, in a certain sense, with the spiritual intelligence, is the maturity of one's spiritual awareness. How much has one actually grown through these available levels of complexity, levels of consciousness, levels of development, however you want to call them. And that's really, really an important indicator because, we don't have practices that help people develop through the multiple intelligences. And that's been a real problem. And the reason we don't is they're not obvious to people, again, unless you have a map or a test or something like that. And so otherwise, they just go unseen, except for developmentalists who work on it. Whereas in terms of states of consciousness, we have an enormous number of practices. Every meditative tradition in the world has dozens and dozens of practices to awaken these states, and virtually no practices to awaken these structures of multiple intelligence. It just doesn't know how to work with them. This is why it's really important, this kind of work. And previously, all we've really seen is James Fowler's stages of faith. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is very useful and is one particular approach to developmental stages. And when he was here and I last talked with him, and I pointed out that those developmental stages were different from the stages of meditative development, mystical stages, he said, well, that's absolutely true. And he'd always kind of wondered about how those fit together. But they are pretty clearly two different stages of development, two different dimensions of development. And, of course, they're closely interrelated, but they're also somewhat independent.
so they can support each other, but again, it's that necessary but not sufficient. If you just work on one, you're not going to get the other.
Exactly. What we haven't had, to sort of repeat the compliment part, is something dealing with spiritual intelligence as a multiple intelligence. And that, you know, basically shows a capacity to grow up in that intelligence. And that's, in a sense, what we're measuring is one's maturity, one's degree of competence in a certain set of skills, one's capacity to utilize these skills in the real world. And so that's why I think this is a, you know, particularly important contribution and particularly useful. So finally, now we have, you know, some way to work with spiritual intelligence as a multiple intelligence, a genuine multiple intelligence that has a set of definable skills and measurable development in each of them. Because if you really look at sort of development on the whole, multiple intelligences, one of the things you find in that sort of common altitude that they all go through is that each major stage seems to add a perspective. And Jane Lovinger actually included that in parts of her definition. So first stage of development was just first person and purely egocentric. And then you move into second person stages of development or ethnocentric. And then you move into third person stages of development or world-centric. And you move into fourth person perspectives or pluralism. And then you move into fifth person perspective or the beginning of integrating them. And so on to sixth and seventh and higher. And so each of those is part of what development means in these multiple intelligences. And so I think that's implicit in what we see in your own inventory. And that these scores from 0 to 5, if you actually look at them, are also a way to say of increasing perspectives. And that's what's so cool, because that's what we haven't had in terms of spirituality. All we've had are exercises and practices that recognize states and move us through states.
But it's only part of the recipe.
It's a very small part of it, and it actually can make even the meditative, the mystical traditions, can actually leave them exposed and embarrassed in really fundamental ways. For example, you can become a Zen master. You can move through all of the necessary states of consciousness to non-dual suchness and still be at amber. And we have a lot of examples of this. We have a whole book full of it called Zen at War, where we have enlightened Zen masters advocating ethnocentric responses and war. And so I asked Genpo, when he first learned the stages of spiral dynamics, you've known, you know, some of the greatest Zen masters in the world. What level on the spiral dynamics curve were they at? And he thought for a moment. He said, every single one of them were blue. So, I mean, we can really see, you know, that in some ways these are, you know, quite independent, even though they are interwoven as well. You know, it certainly explains that some of the contradictions we sometimes see in mystics, where, you know, they're so loving and they seem the one with the, you know, everything that's arising and one with the world, and yet can have some very ethnocentric or sexist or, you know, or racist sort of orientations.
Uneven development.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's really important that we have some measure of, you know, this type of spiritual intelligence as well, because, you know, just doing states won't cut it.
And it's even a trap because it's so much fun.
Well, exactly. Exactly. It is just sort of basically, you know, one step of bliss to the next, and then getting off the manifest world entirely. That's not, you know, frankly, going to help you that much in relationships. It really needs to be balanced with something like this.
It's all ascending and no descending, which I know you've talked about.
Exactly. Certainly one of the pitfalls of that is exactly that. So you go on to say, for simplification, my definition of spirituality is distinct from spiritual intelligence. I define spirituality as, quote, an innate human need to be in relationship with something larger than ourselves, something we consider to be divine, sacred, or of great nobility. And I think that's a great definition. And we've just noticed that the in relationship part, the relationship of soul and God, for example, can turn into an identity of soul and God, what the Sufis call the supreme identity. So that's certainly possible as part of what in relationship means. And then you say, I think quite accurately, I believe the need to transcend the limited self is just part of who we are as a species. It is innate. See Maslow's final book, Farther Reaches of Human Nature. Not everyone wakes up to this innate need of human nature and acts on it. But we tend to be unfulfilled and unhappy when we do not address this need. There's another line from Maslow on that. He said, quote, I warn you, if you set out to deliberately be less than you can be, you will be deeply unhappy for the rest of your life.
So the Gospel of Thomas, where Jesus is said to have said, if you do not bring forth what is within you will destroy you.
Isn't it so? And points out again just how desperately we need, you know, an awakened spiritual intelligence. You state, my embedded assumption, well, I also agree with all of this, my embedded assumption, which is made explicit in the spiritual intelligence model, is that the goal is to be both ascending and descending in the experience of our spirituality. That is, to be in the world while also not being limited to this three-dimensional dualistic experience. What is sacred is what is above, below, beside, and around us. Thus, relationships with the sacred have a focus of service to the separated individuals we encounter, still in contracted consciousness, including ourselves, and to the planet and to the transcended whole. So that's two other meanings of spirituality, ascending or transcendence and descending or immanent, and both are important. As you point out, both need to be included. The skills associated with successfully managing relationships among humans have been defined by Daniel Goleman as the skills, competencies of emotional intelligence. In exactly the same way as relationships with humans, a well-developed relationship with the sacred and our higher self requires skills, the skills of spiritual intelligence. I define spiritual intelligence as the ability to behave with wisdom and compassion while maintaining inner and outer peace, equanimity, regardless of the circumstances. The word behave is important because it reflects the outer demonstration of inner development. Wisdom, compassion, and peace are sometimes shown as capitalized to emphasize the connection with the divine. There's a parable from the East. Love is like a bird with two wings. One wing is wisdom, and the other is compassion. Either wing is damaged, the bird cannot fly. So SQ, spiritual intelligence, is the ability to behave with divinely inspired love. Peace is demonstrated both by the inner state, upper left quadrant, of the person and their outer behaviors and presence, right quadrants. Regardless of the circumstances, reflects what we most admire in our spiritual exemplars. They stay true to their highest selves, even in trying times. In other words, their stage development is advanced and stable. They have stable access to an expansive witnessing awareness, state or vantage point, and they have built the skills of the spiritual intelligence inventory.